Rails Coach Podcast, Episode 5. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the fifth episode of the Rails Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Max Wood, and today we have an interview with James Edward Gray, who wrote the Faster CSV Library and did the Ruby quiz for 3 years. I'll go ahead and start the interview now, and we'll pick you up on the other side. Thanks. Well, I'm going to go ahead and introduce or start out the interview just by introducing you a little bit. I first heard James speak at Mountain West RubyConf of 2009. He talked about something called Little Big World, and I remember it was really interesting, and it was kind of video game-ish and just something that you just don't usually get to see or do, I guess, in professional life, but it sure looked fun. He's JEG2 on Twitter, and he's probably best known in the Ruby community for his library, Faster CSV. Is there anything else that I've missed?
Things I've done? I started the Ruby quiz, and ran that for 3 years. It's run by other people now, but I kept it going in the beginning, and then I wrote a book about that for the Pragmatic Programmers, and then eventually wrote the TextMate book as well for the Pragmatic Programmers. I don't know. I'm found all over the community. They can't figure out how to get rid of me.
Yeah, my neighbor David Brady's going to be upset with me for forgetting Ruby Quiz.
David Brady's a good friend of mine. He's a great guy.
He is. I usually only see him at users groups and at church, but a good guy, definitely. So how long have you been programming?
Since a long time. I got a ColecoVision Atom when I was a kid. It was a strange do-nothing computer that really didn't do hardly anything, but it came with a 1,000-page manual of how to program BASIC. Mm-hmm. And I read that book 541 times, each time understanding one more page of it, and kind of just learned to program that way.
So, oh, nice.
I was about 12, I think.
Huh. And how did you get into Ruby?
How did I get into Ruby? I was a big Perl person. I was in the Perl world for a long time and had been hanging out there, and I just got done with this one job and had some free time, and as part of the process to design Perl 6, which, you know, I think is still kind of underway, they kept talking about, well, we'll steal this feature from Ruby and we'll steal that feature from Ruby and stuff. So I wanted to see what this Ruby was that they were taking all these features from, and so I ended up checking out Ruby then, and I was kind of lukewarm to it at first, but you know, the iterators and stuff were all strange to somebody who's only ever programmed with for loops and things like that, but you know, I eventually warmed up to it and just couldn't go back to anything else.
Makes sense. Ruby's more or less my first deep language that I've gotten into deeply, so it's always interesting to hear the .NETers or the Perl or Python guys, you know, talk about, you know, how they compared or made the transition. So, what do you do with Ruby now? Do you freelance? Do you work for a specific company somewhere?
I run my own company building Rails applications. I do a lot of work though with Hydroop Studios. They're the people that make Scout, the Rails monitoring mm-hmm. service. So I do a lot of work with them and then some other projects on my own, but mostly Rails programming, although mm-hmm. sometimes I get to do some just flat Ruby stuff too. So
yeah. In fact, I think you were on an interview that I heard on the Ruby on Rails podcast about Scout.
We've talked about Scout there. Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting. How does it compare to New Relic RPM?
I think... you know, New Relic does kind of a deeper analysis of your Rails program than Scout specifically does. But Scout's more of a broad tool with plugins mm-hmm. for monitoring MySQL, slow query log, And, you know, I think we just got a Sphinx plugin recently. Mm-hmm. So kind of a more overall server health tool, you know.
That makes sense.
A little more general and not quite as specifically just focused on Rails.
Nice. That makes sense. And
it has a cool plugin system too. So pretty much anything you want to monitor, you can just write a plugin and a few lines of Ruby and monitor it however you want.
It sounds like the kind of the open source way, more or less. You know, if you want a project that's versatile that a lot of people can use, then the easiest way to do that is allow other people to extend it.
Right. Yep. That way, we figured we couldn't think of everything you needed to monitor, but you probably could.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So this podcast kind of focuses on what makes a good developer, how we can become better developers, and things like that. So I'll ask you point blank, what makes a good developer?
I don't know. I'll let you know when I become one. what makes a good developer? That's a good question. I've heard a lot of people like have theories on that. Like I've heard people say it's the musicians, they're great developers, and then mm-hmm. other people say it's the linguists, they're the good developers, or the math people, you know. For my particular group of friends, what we all have in common is that we're all strategy gamers. We love those really complicated board games that take 30 minutes to set up, you know, and you play for 4 hours and stuff. That's our thing. So I don't know. I think all these different groups of people have something in common. Most likely, I think it's the people that like to think about things, you know, creatively, or solve problems, or things like that. You know, our job is mostly just thinking about problems and trying to come up with new ideas and things like that. So I think that's the kind of person that it appeals to. I mean, otherwise you could go do easier stuff, you mm-hmm. know, because it can be kind of tough, you know.
That makes sense.
But also I agree with other people that you've interviewed in the past, Greg and Ben, who both said, you know, passion is definitely very true, but I think you kind of got to be a thinking kind of person too. You know?
That makes sense. Yeah, a certain skill set or disposition maybe.
Right.
What kinds of things do you do to get better?
To get better? Oh, geez. That's a good question. Recently I've been doing the Pomodoro technique. I read the Pomodoro Illustrated as one of the new Pragmatic Programmer books, and I've been trying that out. And I've learned a lot from that. Like, it forces you to take breaks on real schedule. So, you know, you take a 5 minute here or a 10 minute here. And that's been really good for me, because I'm one of those people that'll sit there and just keep hammering away at it, and your efficiency just goes down and down, you know. Whereas if you just take 5 minutes and take a step back, you know, you can kind of refresh your batteries and come at it again, you know. So that's been good for me. Plus, they have you track, you know, this is what I thought I was going to do today, this is what I actually did today. And you can kind of see that at the end of every day. And that helps me see what, you know, reconcile the reality with what I thought, you know, and teaches me things like I really suck at estimating and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, I can understand that. I kind of implemented the practice without the philosophy, and I felt like I was getting more done, but man, at the end of the day, I was just worn out, because, you know, it's those 25 minutes are intense.
Yeah, right.
And so
Good, though. I mean, it makes me pay attention to things like email and instant messaging, and how can I shut those up for 25 minutes, you know, and yet still be considered available to my clients and things like that, you know. So I think it makes me answer good questions, and I enjoy just, you know, learning things like that. And I really enjoyed reading Pragmatic Thinking and Learning. Mm-hmm. Kind of explains how we learn things and stuff, and I got a lot of good tricks and stuff out of that book. So I'm always trying to figure out how I work internally and see if I can improve the formula a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, there's always something to learn, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Plenty of that.
Yeah, it's true. Are there any topics that you've been studying lately that kind of you want to talk about for a minute, or?
Topics I've been studying lately. I've been kind of into NoSQL a lot lately, the NoSQL movement. So playing with different kinds of databases, Redis, and now I'm working with Tokyo Cabinet quite a bit. And I've been, you know, writing about that on my blog, and now I'm building a library that wraps Tokyo Cabinet. And I've really enjoyed working on that. So that's probably what I've been learning about most lately.
Hmm. Okay. Well, what are your thoughts about NoSQL versus SQL? It seems like a lot of people are diehard one way or the other.
I really like it. Not because I think that SQL's dead and we shouldn't be using it or anything crazy like that. I like it because I feel like it's encouraging us to think about data in new ways, you know, and realize that SQL was selected because it's a good, you know, general solution that fits a lot of problems pretty easily and that the knowledge can map over. But there are certain kinds of problems where, you know, you can do something very simple that is actually way better than SQL for that particular case, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's more that we should be trying to fit the right tool to the particular job, you know. And so I like it because it makes me think about data in new ways and try new things with data and stuff. So I feel like it makes me that much more clever.
That makes sense. Does any of this translate over to the Ruby quiz and how you approach that as far as, you know, different ways of thinking about things or different ways of approaching problems?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, the Ruby quiz, I like I said, I was a Perl guy, and they had a Perl quiz of the week run by Mark Jason Dominus, and it was a really good exercise. And he usually did a beginner and an expert version each week, so there was kind of an easier problem and a harder problem. And then watching people send solutions into those, I learned so much. So when I came to the Ruby community, that was the thing I missed the most, was not being able to do those problems anymore. And so for a while, I just did the Perl quiz of the week problems, but I solved them with Ruby. But that wasn't any fun because, you know, I couldn't really compare and contrast with anybody. So so I started the Ruby quiz to, you know, try different things and learn things from it. That's, you know, kind of goes back to, I think it was Greg that mentioned when you interviewed him doing Dave Thomas's code kata's and stuff, which I've done those as well. It's kind of along those lines. I use them for practice and figure things out. And to this day, I still have like these favorite Ruby quiz solutions that I can remember that taught me, you know, oh yeah, that was how I learned how to use stacks really well, you know. And sometimes I'll run into a problem and I'll go back hunting for that Ruby quiz solution that I know does it so great, you know. So
nice. Do you have those solutions up anywhere where people can see them other than on the Ruby quiz site?
Yeah, they're all on the Ruby quiz site. So I guess I haven't actually pointed out the ones that I think are just unbelievable, you know, except in the summaries. But I probably should do that in a blog post sometime or say, you know, these are the ones I keep coming back to time and again, you know, because they're just so cool. But I guess I assume that everybody who's like kind of followed along has their personal favorites, you know, that taught them something, you know, hopefully.
Yeah, I need to go back and do those. I've looked at a few of them, but then I always get sidetracked by something else. But, the code katas have been fun, and I've done some Project Euler stuff, and that's been fun. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, you know. I think it was an excellent contribution to the community and kind of gives people a place to go to figure new problems out or be exposed to new things. So
I always see people, you know, still to this day, I'll see people ask on Ruby Talk, you know, where can I go to try some things out? And people drop the Ruby quiz link and I think, wow, that's cool. It still gets used, you know, so yeah. That's great.
Yeah, they do it. Don't they still put them out on the Ruby Talk list? Is that where
yeah,
they're at now?
Yeah, there are some new exercises now, and there have been some good ones lately that I enjoyed fiddling around with. So yeah, it still goes on. Maybe not quite as steady as it once was, but it's still pretty consistent.
Yeah, I used to be subscribed to the list for that, and there was so much other stuff that came through that eventually I just had to unsubscribe. But
that was true one time. Definitely, it had very high signal to noise ratio. It's kind of died back down now, so it's a calmer place to be.
Mm-hmm. Basically, I was wondering what prompted you to build faster CSV. I mean, to me, CSVs are pretty boring, which makes me fairly grateful for that library because I don't have to think about them.
That library was a total accident. People had complained on Ruby Core about the speed of the built-in CSV library and stuff, and they were discussing it again for, I don't know, I'd seen it at least 4 or 5 times, and they were discussing it again. And so I kind of opened up the library and just wanted to see what the code did and stuff. And it doesn't really do anything all that wrong. And that it was just that, you know, in a tight loop, it was doing kind of a lot of manual parsing, find this character, find that character. And in Ruby, that kind of thing's really slow, you know, just mm-hmm. if you're doing it over and over again, really fast. And I said, well, you know, I think in order to speed it up, we'd have to, you know, lean on the regex engine more so that we could do more with less. And everybody said, well, you can't parse CSV with a regular expression. I said, really? I think there's a regex in mastering regular expression that's supposed to parse CSV. And they're like, no way. So I went and got the book and got it out and kind of coded it up as a simple Ruby quiz solution and I sent it to the mailing list, and some people replied. I think it was Ara T. Howard replied with like 20 examples of horrible input that it didn't handle well, and so I went back and tweaked it and made it pass all of his tests, and that was pretty much the building of faster CSV's parser. So
that's funny.
I just kept putting features on top of it, and then eventually, after it had been out in the wild for a long time, they said, why don't you replace the CSV library in Ruby 1.9 with it? So it is now the CSV library. And then when I did that, I went back and tied it into the M17N engine and everything. So it got some cool features there. And actually, the old faster CSV that people use in 1.8, it doesn't even have a regex parser anymore, not like it used to. Somebody came along and replaced it with a more traditional parsing that actually worked better in 1.8. But in 1.9, the regex engine got so much better that it still works better with the regex engine in 1.9. So it still, if you look at the parsing code in 1.9, it's still pretty much what I developed on the mailing list that time.
Yeah. Well, I know a little bit about regular expressions, and I remember that your wife did a lightning talk at Mountain West on regular expressions.
Yeah, she's a big regex nut, so that's cool. Me too.
Yeah, well, it's certainly an interesting part of the language. Were there any people that kind of helped you learn to program while you were, or during your career, that, you know, who were they and kind of what did they do?
That's a big list. That's a lot of people. I think I learned something from like almost every programmer I interact with, and that's really what I love about it, actually, is just learning things from people and getting to share things with people. So I told you how I got started originally. It was just learning off a book, but eventually I had a high school teacher who taught me Pascal, and he was probably one of the big people that got me started and along the right track and how to think about programming and stuff. And I learned a lot in the Perl community. It kind of has a bad rap for being a place with crazy code and no good practices and stuff. But that's really more of an urban myth than truth. And they have some communities like Perl Beginners is a mailing list, or Perl Monks, and I think you'd be surprised with the good practices they push and kind of drill into you. So I really learned a lot in the Perl community and stuff. And then after getting to Ruby, I've learned so much from Dave Thomas and Jim Wyrick and Glenn Vanderberg. I mentioned A.R.T. Howard earlier. I love just reading his code. That's just something fun to do sometime when you have time. Just go in and crack open one of his libraries and read it. You can't not learn something doing that. Recently, I've been playing with FFI to do my Tokyo Cabinet stuff, and Jeremy Heingardner and John Mitro, who wrote Rufus Tokyo. Jeremy Heingardner wrote Amalgalite, which is another FFI interface, and they've been helping me with that. And then just like people I teach, I think I learned more from the people I teach Ruby to than I actually teach them. So Gregory Brown kind of stands out there. He's the guy who does Prawn and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I used to teach him things. Now I think more he teaches me things. But so pretty much everybody I've talked to. It's a big list, though.
So one thing that I want to ask you, or that came to mind while you were talking, was just do you know these programmers personally? Do you meet them at events or conferences, or do you just go and look and see what they're doing and kind of read through their code, or how do you learn from these guys?
Yeah, I think I do know them all now, but I didn't necessarily when I was learning things from them. Dave Thomas, this is ironic. I think I wrote two books for the guy before I even met him. Uh-huh. I'd always known him in the Ruby community, and then worked with him through the Pragmatic Programmers and stuff, and somehow we were never in the same place at the same time. And then finally at one of the Lone Star Ruby conferences, we both showed up, and I was like, God, I get to meet Dave Thomas, that was great. And Jim Wyrick, I knew him more online than I did in person, and then eventually got to meet him, and I just love Jim. He's great. And Glenn Vanderberg, I met him first at the conferences and stuff, and that was how I got to know him. And then we've traded emails and stuff. He recently helped me kind of plan out a Ruby training I did here, and we tried a bunch of new ideas and stuff that we talked about through email and things. And Ara, I met at a conference, but I knew him before that. So I guess I do eventually meet all of them, but more I find them online first and then meet them later at Ruby conferences.
So do you, when you find them online, do you just email them or write something up on their code or what?
Different ways. A lot of them, Ruby Talk was a very different world a long time ago. So I met a lot of them then, when it was kind of a tight-knit community. I've actually been in the Ruby community since before Rails was released. So back then there was, a really tight community, and I met a lot of them that way through Ruby Talk back then. And that's how I found most of them, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool. You don't meet too many Ruby developers anymore that talk about the Ruby community that long ago. There are only a few people that really have been around that long, I guess.
Yeah, it really was a different place, just because, before everybody discovered it, it was kind of a smaller language and a kind of tight-knit group, and then Rails brought lots of good things, but with it also brought a higher signal noise ratio, that kind of changed the community split up into groups so that, it could cope with the massive influx of people, so we weren't just like one community anymore.
That makes sense. Another question I have is more about your company and what you do. I'm kind of curious just how you run your company and how you find clients and what you like about maybe doing the freelance work or client work versus, a standard 9-to-5 job.
Okay. In my particular company, I don't really enjoy the marketing side of the business and things like that, finding clients. I love working with clients, once they have a project and they're to that point, but I don't like, hunting them down and stuff and doing the meetings and things like that. So I contract out to get clients and things. And mostly I just do the programming side of it because that's the part that I'm really interested in. And I work with other people because I'm not a big designer. I'm not a good designer and stuff. So, you know, I work with other people to do those parts of the business and stuff. So what I love about that particular setup is I get to do exactly what I love doing, you know, and other people get to do the parts that they're better at. So I really like that. But I do have some projects where I do the whole thing, start to finish and stuff. And that can be fun too. But mostly I just enjoy the programming side.
That makes sense. Kind of sounds like the ideal freelance setup to me.
It's my ideal setup. That's right. Yeah.
It's true. Are there certain development practices that you follow, like TDD or commenting practices or things like that, that you try and implement in all of your projects?
Yeah, I am a big tester. I love testing. Though I don't test everything, but maybe that's a different answer. But I do test drive most of my development, and I don't know, as far as like major practices, I do try to be, you know, pretty agile, but I don't like strictly adhere to, you know, we have to do it the XP way and write story cards or anything. I do most of that. You know, I use Pivotal Tracker and put the stories in there and you know, work off of that and stuff. So like that, but I think I use most modern kind of practices, but I'm not real dogmatic about it, I guess.
Okay. Are there things that you think the community as a whole could do better? Or?
Community as a whole could do better. Well, in the Ruby community, our big weakness is probably documentation, right? Mm-hmm. So bad, missing, insufficient. I think we've pretty much done it all. But I think we could improve in that area. Actually, my first couple of projects in Ruby, I documented some of the standard libraries. I wrote the documentation for ERB and PStore, and so that was some of the first thing I do. And I still try to use my blog to do a little of that. Like it a while back, everybody, when 1.9 was coming up, and everybody kept saying, well, M17N is totally undocumented. So I just wrote a series of articles on my blog explaining everything I had figured out about it when I was converting the CSV code and stuff. And so that kind of came being the first bit of documentation for it, you know.
I think
we could all do more of that. And if you want an easy project, that's especially for a beginner, it's a pretty good project because you don't have to be much of an expert. You just kind of got to poke around, play with the code, you know. Figure out what it does, you know, write it down, and you'll help people, you know. It's a pretty good project.
It's true. Do you have any other tips for new developers?
Other tips for new developers? I think one of my tips would be to dig into the things you encounter. Like, I meet a lot of people that come now through Rails, which is great, and I'm glad it brings us so many new faces and stuff, but you know, then you need to take the time and dig a little deeper and learn some Ruby, you know, underneath. I'm probably like the worst Rails developer in the world because I don't know very much of Rails. You know, I knew Ruby back before Rails existed, so whenever I come up against a problem, I lean on my Ruby knowledge and solve it that way. And the guys I work with, they all make fun of me. You know, they're like, "You don't know there's a plugin for that," you know. Or,
right.
But I know Ruby well enough to get done what I want to get done. And sometimes they're like, "Wow, I never knew Ruby did that," you know, or whatever. And good tricks like the hash class has a fetch method on it, and you should look that one up and check it out because I use it all the time and parameters and stuff in Rails methods when I want to give a default or something like that. And there's a array method. It's literally spelled like the class, so it starts with a capital letter, and it's kind of weird, but it converts things to an array, and I use that one a lot when I'm going through lists and web pages, and the guys I work with are always like, wow, how do you know about all these weird methods, you know, and stuff, but that's how I get work done. And then we talked about regular expression, and I love regex. I use it every day to tear up data and stuff like that, and I really think it's helpful. So I think you can gain a lot by investing a little time and just playing with Ruby outside of Rails, and your Rails will get better. And then invest a little time figuring out regular expression, you know, and yeah, and that'll hook you too. And then, you know, even I'm guilty. Until just recently, I used the, you know, Google your problem method of writing JavaScript, you know, because I never bothered to learn it, you know, but jQuery finally convinced me to sit down and learn a little JavaScript, you know, and I can already tell that's paid off quite a bit. So I think it's worth it to kind of dig into your surroundings and dig a little deeper and see what you can figure out. You know, it'll pay you back.
It's true. It's really true. I got started the other way. I mean, I'm one of the people that Rails pulled in, and I really found that as I got to the point where I was pretty comfortable with Rails, the tougher problems that I was running into were problems that required me to learn Ruby. And so as I learned Ruby, it actually helped me understand Rails better, because, you know, an active record model is just a class. And so you can do all of the class things with models or controllers. And so you start finding, oh, well, if I do this and this, this opens up all these other possibilities for me. And it was interesting that, you know, coming at it from the other direction, you know, you learn a simple concept about the way that the language is constructed, and you find that you have all of these possibilities there for you to take advantage of in your application.
Yeah, I think people don't appreciate how much that is. I mean, I've seen people use like really complicated things to I've seen test cases where they were basically sharing some tests between two different test cases, and they invented this complicated system of how to generalize these tests, and so they could use them in both places. And I just pick up the methods and stick them in a mix-in and mix it into both classes, and boom, done, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it's true, you know. I did that with just some Rails associations that had to go into a couple of different models. And, you know, once I explained that to the guys that I was working with, you know, they're like, well, yeah, that makes a lot more sense. But, you know, you just don't think about these things until you encounter them.
Right.
So, is there anything else that you can think of that we should discuss as far as being a good developer, better developer, or tips you have for new developers that we haven't talked about, or anything like that?
I think I would just tell people to get involved, you know, like go to the conferences, meet people, you know, talk at conferences and write, you know, documentation. I already said that one. Develop libraries that, you know, you have a little need for or something, you know. I mean, there'll be pieces of that you'll do well and pieces of that you won't do well. But at every turn, you'll learn things from it, you know, good and bad. And that's, you know, there. I think everybody always looks for the shortcut of how to become a good, you know, programmer or things like that. And I always joke that it only takes about 5,000 conversations with a compiler, you know. I mean, once you, you know, I used to write Java programs. I'm actually Java certified, some of my early Java programs, I'd, you know, just write this tons of code and work on it forever, and then I'd try to compile it, and the compiler would come back with 903 errors, you know, and you're like, oh yeah, it's going to be a long night, you know, but you sure learn a lot picking through that kind of stuff, you know, so it's, pretty much just get involved, you know, it's the best way.
That's true. Can I ask you about conferences real quick?
Sure.
Which conferences do you usually go to or try and speak at?
Which conferences do I usually go to or try and speak at? The first one I ever went to, I think, was the Ruby 2006 conference. I think it was in Denver that year, and I went there. Nowadays, it seems to just bounce back and forth on the coast. And I don't usually make those trips because I like to take my wheelchair van, and it's a long drive, you know, all the way over to the coast. So I don't usually go quite that far. I always hit Lone Star because it's kind of in my backyard. It's, it's only a six-hour drive from my house, really. So I like to go down there, and I have been to every one of those, although I think I'm going to miss this year's because my wife is actually due with our baby, right, about 3 days before Lone Star. So,
well, congratulations.
Thanks. But, yeah, I will make it this year. But and then Mountain West, that was the first time I had gone to that last year, which you mentioned. But I was really impressed with it. It was really high quality, and I love the single track nature of it and stuff. So I really wanted to go back there this year too, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen either. But next year I hope to make it back to both Mountain West and Lone Star.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, and I went to Tokyo. I got to go to Ruby Kaigi and do the Japanese Ruby conference, and that was totally awesome. Everybody should do that.
Oh, you lucky. Yeah. Okay, I have one last question. I've been saving this one for last. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Why is it James Edward Gray 2 instead of Junior?
Instead of Junior? My dad didn't like Junior, so they didn't want to call me that. The only reason I use my full name everywhere is James Gray is about the most common name in the world. So if I go by that, my eye doctor gives me the wrong prescriptions and stuff like that. So I just use my full name because it's a lot more unique.
Yeah, and nobody puts the two after their name, so we know who we're talking about.
Right, yeah. Although it's pretty interesting if you just watch it around. Lots of people just randomly change it in small ways, like David Black, you know, everybody knows him. He usually calls me James Edward Gray the Third, so it kind of goes up and down sometimes. But
do you think you're going to have a James Edward Gray the Third?
No, I lost that argument. My wife believes that all children should have a unique first name. So no James Edward Gray the Third. The buck stops here.
I have a cousin that's a third. And I'm a little frightened if there's a fourth.
It's probably good for everybody that there's not going to be a third. I'm sure she's doing us a favor.
All right. Well, thank you very much for doing the interview. We should have it up tomorrow morning. And, hopefully we'll see you around at Mountain West or some of the other conferences or just online somewhere on your blog or anywhere else. If people want to find your blog, where do they go?
It's blog.grayproductions.net. Gray is G-R-A-Y, like I spell my name.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thanks. Have a good evening.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
All right. So that's the interview, and I'd just like to thank James again. It was really fun to talk to him. I do apologize if it was a little disjointed in the middle bit, but we got interrupted. Also, really quickly, I would really appreciate anybody who is enjoying this podcast to go to iTunes and write a review. I also am accepting feedback, both audio and text, at podcast@railscoach.com. You can record something and send it to me, or you can just email me. And, if you have relevant questions, you can just... I'll get those and read them on the show. You can also tweet me on Twitter. I'm Charles Max Wood on Twitter. I also have Rails Coach, at Rails Coach on Twitter, and that's just news related to the podcast and maybe a few blips here and there related to Ruby and Rails. Finally, you can call us at 801-753-8279. Just leave a message, and I can record that and put it on the show as well. Thanks, and we'll catch you next week.